You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Katrina Mayer. She's an author of The Mustard Seed Way, a best-selling author, and has also written The Hollerian Vision. She has a new website called Illuminating You and speaks on issues of health and longevity and feeling well in all aspects in terms of being grateful and just living a full life. Katrina, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Brainerd.
So I was looking at your new site, illuminatingyou.com, and there was a lot of interesting articles in there, and I want to talk about how you got to this position, but I think to begin with, maybe just tell us a little bit about what this website is about, Illuminating You. You're centered for enlightened learning. How do you perceive this website as being used by people?
Oh, that's such a great question. My vision is that, and I got this snapshot of this kind of from years of being on Facebook, there's people really all around the world who are looking to connect with one another on topics of health and wellness and well-being and longevity and, like you said, just feeling good and loving life. And there's this whole group of us out there, but a lot of us don't feel connected necessarily. And the internet has become such an extraordinary tool to do that. So I created this site, Illuminating You, to bring people together to talk about those topics and to read about those topics and to share about those topics of health, wellness, and well-being and longevity. So, yeah, it just launched this week, and I'm so thrilled with all the amazing feedback we've been getting from people. It just it really was well-received, which leads me to believe it's just what people have been looking for in this world.
I think so. I think there's so much interest in, you know, I don't know what the trend of the world is really, but there seems to be a lot of interest in things that help us all to live less complicated lives, because I suppose at the very least, with all the electronic devices that we have and information streaming in all the time, there's all this stimuli that's hard to parse out, and in one way it's wonderful because we have access to things like Illuminating You and resources, but it's also hard to edit it all. So that's exciting that you're doing this. I began reading some of the articles that you have on there, and there was a lot of great material. The one I'd like to start with, and then I'd like to move a little bit into how you began all this and in your life, but there was one about longevity and the idea of living to 220 or more, and specifically about cells dividing. Can you really live to be 240 years old? Was the blog post? Can you talk a little bit about that? In one way, it seems kind of incredulous and impossible, and in another way, this idea of on a cellular level of kind of reverse aging or not aging seems makes sense. What's your feeling about that, and how are we supposed to act on a piece of writing like that?
And the title does exactly what it needs to do, which gets you to stop and go, what? Is that really possible? And that article was actually written by Peter Ragnar, and he's been writing about longevity for a long time, and I was reading his stuff for many years before we became married. but we both have a fascination with longevity and the actual mechanics of it, not just the feel-good word, you know, oh, I want to live a long time. What actually happens biologically to create a long life? And one of the things we had done a couple of years ago was actually have our telomeres tested. Are you familiar with the telomeres at the ends of your DNA?
Yeah, but let's talk about it. Tell us a little bit about telomeres, because I know that was a big part of that article. But for the listeners, what is a telomere, and how do you get them tested, and why is that important?
Yeah, it's really, really, really cool. It's a pretty recent development. It's what I consider probably the only test at this moment that can test your true biological age. So what they're able to do is extract some DNA from a blood sample, and they measure the end caps on your DNA. And those end caps are what are called telomeres. And telomeres are, I relate them to like that little piece of plastic on the end of your shoelace that keeps your shoelace from unraveling. That's what the telomere does on your DNA. It keeps the DNA from unraveling. But each and every time your DNA replicates throughout your lifetime, which is a natural process, that telomeres get a little bit shorter. So they're longest when you're young, and they're shortest when you're old.
Telomeres are, as you said, or one way of talking about them is the ends of DNA, like the little plastic things on the end of your shoelaces, and you said over
right.
time they become, they change. How exactly do they change over time?
When your DNA replicates, which is a natural process throughout our lifetime, in the replication process, the telomere actually gets a little bit shorter with each replication. So that's a normal process. However, what we're finding now is that there are actually ways to keep the DNA, even though it replicates, but to keep the telomeres from getting shorter and shorter, we can actually make them longer at this point. We're now finding this, and there's scientific evidence of this. So this is pretty exciting that we can actually, Peter and I have been looking at different ways to lengthen our telomeres and to actually stay younger than our chronological age. So we did have the testing done, and that is, in fact, what we've been doing.
And what does the testing say? So how do you get the testing done, and what were the results, if you don't mind me asking, and what do those results mean, actually?
Okay. What you do is you, I can get you the name of the company. I don't have it off the top of my head, but they do telomere testing. I think at this point there's only one company doing it. And what they do is you can go down to a lab. They would, draw a vial of blood. It goes to this particular lab. They pull out your DNA and they measure those little end caps or the telomere on your DNA. And they can tell by the length of your telomere what your biological age is. So they'll kind of put it into the system and say it's this long, and people of this age usually have telomeres this length. So I'm going to be 52 this year, but my telomeres say that I am 27 years old.
Hmm.
So in essence, my biological age is only about half of my actual chronological age, which is pretty exciting. It means I have a lot more years to do a lot of
things.
That
is exciting. Why is that? Why are your telomeres at that stage and others not at that stage?
I actually put together a whole course about this because I think there's so many different things that we can do on a regular basis to keep the aging process, slow it down and even reverse it, all the way from what we're eating, how we're handling stress, how much water we're drinking, if we're exercising, how do we look at life in general. I really think it runs the gamut of so many different things in our lives. And right now we live on a beautiful farm in Kentucky, and people will say, oh, well, you have no stress there. Yeah, but for 48 and a half years of my life, I was a high-level bank executive in New York. So I know what stress is. So it's really, I think, a way of handling the stress in a good way, and to do a lot of other things in your life to try to minimize toxins in your life, whether those are environmental toxins or mental toxins or whatever else is going on. There's really a lot of different things happening to make that, I think, to help with keeping the telomeres longer.
That makes sense. You know, speaking from my own perspective on health, and my wife both, you know, eat organically, are into fitness, like to do everything we can to live healthy lives. One thing that seems particularly difficult is how you manage stress. For myself, you know, I use a kind of meditation apps, different kinds of things, but still I find myself often being, you know, resentful, making judgments about people and things that are, you know, so minuscule as to be almost absurd, like while driving, getting irritated that the driver in front of me is probably texting at the light before he or she is going. That's why they're not going. And all these things that I'm aware of, but realize, you know, how do we battle these things? I'm aware that it must take an enormous toll on me to be irritated at all these people in different ways. How do we manage that in a lifestyle?
And you know what? I think we are here on this planet to experience a whole range of all the different emotions. And what we like to do here is just to be aware, to be the person with the emotion as well as the person watching the person with the emotion. I don't know if that makes sense, but being the observer and the observed simultaneously, so that we can go, oh, there I am. I see myself doing that. I remember. That's where I get upset with somebody about texting. I've done that one. I do that well. All right. I can leave that one alone now. And we like to play with that. I mean, I think if we get too upset with ourselves over these things, that just adds more stress to the stress. Rather than just saying, oh, that's the part where I get upset about X, Y, and Z. Okay, I know how to do that. Let's see how I play this one out. Do I let it go, or do I feel like playing this out a little bit more this time? And just be with it. I think we're really hard on ourselves a lot of times, which just adds a lot more stress.
So part of it is not being as hard on yourself to recognize, for example, in my position, to observe what I'm doing as well as doing it, and then try to let go of it in the moment. Because I imagine, like myself, this happens to people all day long on different levels. If we become aware of it, little irritants or whatever it is that makes us stressful, deadlines or frustrations with our computer or phone or something like that.
Exactly. And just, you know, to have a sense of humor about it, too. You know, I had a boss years ago who, if I went into him and said, oh, this, and this is happening, and he's like, well, how did you deal with it before? And I told him, and he goes, well, how did that work out for you? That was his famous line, how did that work out for you? So I like to keep that little recording, that little meme in the back of my mind. So if I find myself falling into a pattern again, oh, there I am getting upset about this thing. I've done that before. How did that work out for me in the past?
Right.
And there comes a point where you just go, I'm done playing that role. I'm done playing that game. I don't need to. I see how it worked out the past 20 times I did that. I can let it go now. And a lot of times it's just that decision to let it go. That's all you needed, because then it goes.
Right.
And then all of a sudden no one's ahead of you texting. All of a sudden there is no more of it once you've actually let it go. It just sort of evaporates, which is, I think, amazing to watch too.
That is. Let's move back a little bit. What led up to your change in life to be pursuing and giving so much to the world, and ultimately your marriage, I guess. It seems wonderful what you're doing. When I interviewed Peter for this series, one of the fascinating things I thought he said about longevity was, if you're having a positive impact every day in some regard with the world, you have a reason to be here, and it's very motivating, and I really love that. And so what I'm asking you is, what led up to you changing your lucrative and high-powered and stressful position in New York to a complete change in life, really, and all that you're doing to help the world?
And I think there's several different levels to the answer of that question, one being that from a very young age, I always said I wanted to be an author and I wanted to make a difference. So I had that knowing very, very young. But I think, just like you say, you want to be a, you know, astronaut or a ballerina when you're 5 years old, you put a lot of those things on the back burner and you may or may not revisit them. But the writing thing really stuck with me for most of my life. And I always felt like I wanted to write as a way of making a difference in the world. But I did get caught in the whole career thing and a lot of different other things happening in my life. And then one of the things that I talk about on the video of my KatrinaMayer.com website is, I had a very life-changing moment where I was married at the time and in the mid-90s and had an ectopic pregnancy, which I came literally minutes away from dying from internal hemorrhaging. And when I was able to come through that health crisis, it made me reassess everything that was happening in my life. And that marriage, actually, I wasn't the one who instigated the end of that marriage, but it kind of all happened around the same time as me reassessing my whole life and saying, what do I really want to do and what's very important to me? And I started reevaluating so many things, the people that I was spending my time with, the way that I was eating, how I was taking care of myself, what books I was reading, just about anything you could scrutinize and analyze I was doing at that point in my life, which was amazing, and it really gave me a whole nother zest for life and wanting to go forward. And I really felt I was given my life back in order to do something much more life-changing for myself and for other people around me. So that was a moment that turned things around. And then I was still in a banking career in New York for a long time before I finally made the change about 3 years ago to marry Peter and move away from the city and to become a full-time author and motivational speaker.
So that was really, a near-death experience you had, you know, or,
yes,
or something close to it, when, you know, to have that kind of, you know, massive bleeding and realize that, you know, not only did you survive, but also, you know, you had a child. I mean, that's kind of incredible. And then everything began to change. So then you moved away, and what was the steps between then your recovery, which I guess wasn't that long, but it sounds like spiritually or psychologically your recovery progressed. What was the trajectory of that progression from the 90s to now? How did that grow?
You know, that's a fascinating question, because now I have more depth of perception and I can look back on it. At the time, it didn't seem like I necessarily was shifting or changing as much as I wanted to, but looking back on it now, I'm able to see that I really immersed myself in a lot of positive reading. I did a lot of writing. My first book was written just a couple of years after my ectopic pregnancy because I wanted to share my journey of going through a health crisis and actually ending up on the other side of it feeling like I had gotten more from that than just a challenge. I actually ended up becoming a stronger and better person because of it. And that book really got me, that was The Mustard Seed Way, was a constant in my life over the last 12 years, 14 years, because I could keep going back, even though I was doing other things in my life, I could keep going back and going, remember, you wanted to be an author and a motivational speaker, and look how this really touches people's lives. So I was able to keep that alive in my spirit for all that time that I was still evolving and growing. And it was hard to leave New York. Also, that was a big decision because I was leaving friends and family. But I realized this was my dream, to live on a farm where I could grow organic fruits and vegetables and live the lifestyle much closer to what I had always dreamed of. So I needed to get to that point where I could just say, I can still go back to New York, visit everybody, say hello when I need to and want to, and now go off and live this part of my dream. So, and it's still a growing dream, and it's still a shifting and evolving dream. So when we have a conversation in another 10 years, we'll see how it's changed in that time, too.
That's true. So today, it's a fascinating journey you've had, and a wonderful one, and people can read more about that in The Mustard Seed Way. What do you think is a prescription of life for, let's say, people who are living, whether they're living in cities or outside of cities, what can be done right away to make a change? I mean, does it have to be a big change or a small change? Or what do you suggest for people to live a healthier lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And it's something that I delve into pretty deeply in a new online course I created that should be out soon. I'll let you know about that as soon as it is. But it's really about the little things. It may not be that you can move from New York to Kentucky to an organic farm. It may just be the little things. It may be just like you said, instead of getting upset because the person in front of you at the light is texting, let's, you know, make it an experience of maybe throwing them a little happy thought, like, hey, you, what you doing over there? Isn't it time to move? You know, and instead of feeling the upset, sometimes it's really just those little tiny things that we do in our lives that create the bigger changes before we even realize that they're happening. So if it's that, you know, Peter and I are vegan, and maybe you don't want to make a commitment to be vegan, that's fine, but maybe you want to, you've heard all the health benefits, and you say, one day a week, I'm going to eat more fruits and vegetables, or meatless Mondays, I love that one, or maybe you'll make the investment in a good blender so you can make yourself some smoothies every day, or it's often in those small decisions that the bigger things just naturally start happening. So I find for most people when I do coaching with them, it's just to find something that they're passionate about, whether that's health or wellness, and find one small change that they could make. If you work on the third floor of your office building, instead of taking the elevator, just, you know, make the commitment to walk the stairs every day. I say a lot of changes happened for me 1 year because I decided not to drink sugar in my tea. That was a New Year's resolution I made. And boy, that just changed everything for me in my diet. It made such a dramatic shift for me. This, to me, I don't think we need to make huge changes because those will happen. I think it's more about making small, little incremental changes and just making a commitment to making those happen.
Katrina, I love hearing that, and I think it was wonderful talking to you about all this today. In this interview and in this interview post, there'll be links to your books and your new website, Illuminating You. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with? I think that you've given a lot of information, and it's exciting what you're doing with your life and how other people can tap into so much that you've learned and continue to teach through courses online and all the things available on your website. Is there anything you want to leave with readers about how they can have a better day today or anything at all?
Yeah, I love to boil everything down to this. Most of us need to relax and stop taking everything so seriously. And I'll start by speaking about myself. And just we need to relax and enjoy, literally smell the roses, look outside, enjoy some fresh air, and just not make everything into such a big deal. It's all good. It's all good. Relax, enjoy. Life is going to happen whether we're uptight about it or not. So that's really what it boils down to, and that's what we try to practice a lot around here.
Katrina, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciated your thoughts and all the books and work that you continue to do on behalf of health and all that you're involved with to make people's lives better.
Thank you, Brainerd. I so appreciate your call and all the great questions you had. I look forward to working with you some more in the future, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.